with Alan and Elizabeth, and I mean, are they based in Yarmouth? So learn there.
Oh, okay.
Remember?
Next time you have to bring your father to
work. Yeah, my father's flower. Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
All right. So we are holding on Bays on the Bays, about the middle of the narrow lines, like in Bachvarta. Okay. Oma Ola. Remez la'edim zomin na'atoru minayin. Where do we have in the Torah a remez about Edim zomin, a hint about Edim zomin? So what do you mean remez la'edim zomin? Well, k'siv v'asi, it's like Asher zomin. You don't need a remez. It says straight out that you do to the Edim zomin what they plot. Ella, no. What he means is remez la'edim zomin shalokim na'atoru minayin. Where is the remez in the Torah that the Edim zomin get malchus? Like in the cases of our Mishnah, where they wanted to give edus that a person who was thought to be a kohen is really a chol, and it turns out that they're Edim zomin. Or they wanted to give edus that a person goes to the Ari Miklot, when in fact he shouldn't. How do we know that in cases like that they get malchus? Just give, because you have a pasuk like this in Parshas Kisetze. You have a pasuk. You have two people come with an argument to base. In the pasuk says, and it continues, "V'hikru es tzaddik." They declare the tzaddik to be righteous. The tzaddik meaning, as the Alter Rebbe says in Perek Aleph of Tanya, not a tzaddik as in he's never done any averus, but in the sense he's tzaddik bedino. He's tzaddik relative to this thing. He's the one who's innocent. He's the one whose position is right or whatever. So they declare him a tzaddik, the Yoshira a rasha, and they declare the rasha to be the rasha,
the guilty one.
And then the pasuk continues, "V'hoya im bina koisa rasha." That then, if the rasha is supposed to be given malchus, then they give him malchus. So the question is, what does one have to do with the other? Mishum v'hikru es tzaddik v'yeshiru es rasha. Therefore, v'hoya im bina koisa rasha. What's the connection? If the pasuk is just trying to tell us the fact that you have that you can have an argument and then between people, and it comes out in the end as malchus, there's no reason to mention the fact that they declared the innocent party to be innocent. That's not relevant to the fact that they're giving the guilty party malchus.
What is relevant is the guilty.
What's relative is the guilty party. And in fact, the Ramban on the pasuk explains a little bit differently. The question is, even that, I mean, usually cases of malchus, we'll learn about malchus in the third parak, cases of malchus generally do not come from dinei mominis in the first place. Cases of malchus, most of the time, don't involve two litigants against each other. Most of the time, they involve things bein odom lamakom. They involve things like eating chalev, or doing various other isurim, not whether they're eating noiser, doing malacha and yomtev, whatever, all the various ones that we'll talk about in the third parak. Usually you don't have a tzaddik and a rasha there. So what does the pasuk mean? Ella, no. What it means is like this. Edim shiushiru es tzaddik. The scenario is like this. You have Edim originally came to Beis Din and declared a person who really is a tzaddik, they declared him guilty. In other words, they came to Beis Din and said that Yankel has broken Shabbos, let's say, which makes him a rasha, which makes him therefore chayv misa. But also Edim Achrini, and then other Edim came and showed that these original Edim are Edim Zomin, that you couldn't have given Edus about that because you weren't there at the time. Therefore, v'hitzdiku es tzaddik d'mikara. So therefore, they showed that the person who really all this time was a tzaddik is in fact still a tzaddik, that Yankel did not in fact break Shabbos. V'shavinu lahani rishoyim, and they therefore pointed out that these people who came and testified are the actual rishoyim. So now we understand. V'hitzdiku es tzaddik. They declared that tzaddik Yankel is in fact a tzaddik. V'yoshiru es rasha, and they show that these edim who came and testified first are actually rishoyim. That is when v'hoyim bin akoyis rasha. That is when we go and give these rishoyim, these edim malchus. Not in that case where if it was misa, it would be misa. Actually, okay, I shouldn't have said machal shabbos. They said that Yankel ate chaylev or whatever. The point still remains the same.
Whatever.
The question is, but typically we like sana. Why does Ula need such a convoluted way of saying? Such a complicated way to say that the guy is chayav malchus, just say much more simply. The pasuk says, "Lo'sana bereacha ed shaker." You should not testify falsely against another yid. It's a lav. It should be chayav malchus. That's it. What more do you need than that? The answer is mishum to have a lav she'in ben ma'isa, because edus is because testifying falsely is a lav she'in ben ma'isa. There's no ma'isa involved. You need a ma'isa. The whole lav she'in ben ma'isa in loykin olaf. If you do not have a ma'isa involved if the lav does not involve a ma'isa, you don't get malchus for it.
What's the case of a ma'isa?
Well, so a ma'isa would be, for example, a person ate chaylev, let's say. That's a ma'isa.
Speaking is not a ma'isa.
So actually, we learned in Sanhedrin two different ways of looking at it. So we learned in Sanhedrin two different ways of looking at it. You know, in today's Tanya, the author mentioned the concept that in Halacha, Akima thoughts of having ma'isa, that moving his lips is considered a ma'isa.
Right.
So we discussed this actually in Sanhedrin. We said two possibilities. One, we had an opinion there that talking is not considered a ma'isa.
Mm-hmm.
The other opinion said talking can be considered a ma'isa. It's true, but in the case of Eidos, it's a special case because we said over there, Sheyeshna Beriya or Sheyeshna Beiya. We had two different gersois over there. One is, it means, what does
when
it mean? In Sanhedrin, we talked about it in connection with Oyvind Yudoni. One possibility is when they come and say Eidos, essentially what they're saying is we saw this happen. Well, seeing is not a maaseh. Even if you're going to argue that the speaking and based in is a maaseh, seeing is not. And since the seeing is the basis of what they're talking about, then it can't be considered a maaseh in that case, even if their speaking itself could be considered a maaseh. Mm-hmm. The other possibility, we said over there, there was a girsa, sheyashanan v'iya, that conceivably you could have edim that come to based in, and it turns out they don't actually have to even move their lips to say the edus. Beistin can ask, or at least with one of them, you can have, for example, we're going to learn later on in the Perek, you need both of them to be declared Zayman in order to get the punishment. You can have, for example, one of them comes to Beistin and testifies on a certain date, I saw Yankel eating Chaylev, let's say. And then they ask the second aide, did you see the same thing? And he just says, like, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, without even moving his lips. Yeah. And that's considered enough of a valid aide, at least on a Daraisa level. Okay. So therefore, saying Eidos in and of itself does not necessarily have to involve moving his lips to follow. Okay.
An Eidos is not in need of mitzvah.
So therefore, it's not necessarily does it involve mitzvah, so therefore we can't give him Eidos only on that basis. When we have, the Pasuk is telling us, the case of the Dikwas, a Tzadik, the Yeshua, a Rasha, then that tells us that in a case like that, then we do give him Malkus. Mefarshim discussed the question, so now does it mean that we're saying that basically kind of becomes the default punishment for Adam Zayman if we're not able to give them the punishment that they meant for the person originally, or is it only in certain special cases? Whatever. The point still remains, at least in those cases, we have that concept. We learn that from this limud of Olam. That we give them Malkus in cases like our Mishnah. Okay. Turn it up on them. Dalad Dvarim Nemru Be'edim Zayman. There are four rules that apply to Adam Zayman. Number one, a Nasin Ben Grusho Ben Chalutza. When we say rules, I mean, there's a lot of rules. What we mean is four things that could conceivably have happened to their victim, to the person they're testifying against, if their edus turned out to be true. But because their edim zemin, we do not do those things to them. Number one, a nasin ben gursho ben chalotza. Number one, we don't make them a cholo. We don't make them a ben gursho ben chalotza if they were testifying about somebody, like we said in the Mishnah. Instead, we give them malchus. Number two, ve'in goylem la'ore miklot. We don't send them off. So we said if they were Kohenim, we could have declared them to be a cholo, or we talked about what the Ritva had brought from Tosfos, that maybe even if he's Yisrael, we would say that if he were to have relations with a woman, it would pass all her from the Kohuna, as if they were Chalolin. Whatever, we don't do that, we give them Malkus instead. Number two, we do not send them off to the Ore Miklot if they testified that the guy killed Beshogig. Again, as the Mishnah said, we give them Malkus. Number three, the in Meshalman is a kofer. We do not make them pay kofer. If they testified that somebody's shur, which was Muad, which this shur has already killed people before, if they testify that this shur now killed another person, where if it was true, then not only the shur would be killed, but also the owner would have to pay a kofer, would have to pay a monetary fine, or monetary kapara, as we're going to talk about, we don't make them do that. So that's you don't have to whisper. It's fine. You can ask
you
me
have to
directly.
The kofer.
Yeah. Okay. So you can ask me directly. It's okay.
Yeah.
The kofer is so if you have a person has an ox or any kind of animal which gores people, it bangs into them or whatever and kills them. So such an ox has to be killed. If that happens three or more times, and each time Adam comes to Basin and say that it happens, not only the ox has to be killed if we ever catch it, but also the owner is going to have to pay a kofer, which is a certain amount of money. We're going to discuss in the Gemara soon what that amount is. Either we're going to have two different opinions. Either it's the value of the person who owns the ox, meaning we would figure out like how much if we were to sell him as a slave, how much would he be worth, and that's the amount he has to pay, or it's the value of the person who was killed by the ox. Same idea. We would figure out how much he would have been worth if he was sold as a slave. We'll talk about that in the Gemara soon, but that's what kofer is. So here, where it was Edom Zayman, where these Edom turn out to be false Edom, we do not make them do that. Now, what do we do instead? The Rambam holds that we also give them Malchus in that case. The Ramban disagrees with that and says that no, the Malchus is specifically only two cases we mentioned in our Mishnah.
And we give them?
According to him, it's not clear what we give them. We don't make them pay the kofer, though.
Kofer comes with knas.
So that we're going to discuss soon, whether it's Mammon or knas. We'll get to that here. Okay. And number four, the einim karen be'eved ivri. And number four, suppose they testify that a person stole, where the din is, if he doesn't have the money to pay back what he stole, we sell him as an eved ivri. We do not sell them as an eved ivri, though, if it turns out that they were eidim zayim. And again, the Rambam would hold they get malchus, and the Ramban would disagree with that. We're going to learn now why. Okay. Mishum Rabbi Akiva Amru, in the name of Rabbi Akiva, they said there's a fifth din that applies to Edom Zomin, af en mishamin al piatman. That they also do not pay if they themselves admit to it. So we found them to be Edom Zem, and you had other Edom come and say, you were with us elsewhere, therefore you can't possibly give Edom, well, therefore you can't possibly give Edom on this. But then they went, then before the guy had a chance to take them to Beis Din and say, no, then you owe me X amount of money because you were trying to make me lose whatever amount of money. If they themselves go to another Beis Din and say, we're Edom Zem, and we became Edom Zem in another Beis Din, we're not going to obligate them to pay. We'll see. We'll discuss that. We're going to discuss that soon in the Gemara on Gimel Amud Aleph. We'll deal with the details about that. Okay. So let's go through how we know these things. Einasin ben Grusho ben Chalotza. We say that we don't make them a ben Grusho ben Chalotza. We don't make them Chalolim Kedam Morim for the reasons that we said at the beginning of the Gemara. Either we said because whatever you do, you're not going to be able to do. You're either not going to make them exactly as they wanted to do to the victim because they wanted to make him and all of his descendants postal. You would only be making him postal, and if you're making him and his descendants postal, then you're violating Rasitim Loi. You should only do it to him, not to his children. We also try to kavachomer, but we slugged up the kavachomer.
We cannot infer that lo means also children.
No. So that was the reason. The ain goyim la'orim miklat, and we don't send them to the orim miklat again to dam moron. As we said earlier on our amud, we had Rish Lakish had said the reason is because you have the pasuk says who, which means only he goes to the orim miklat, not the edim zaymin. Rabbi Yechanan had tried to use a kavachomer, but we slugged up that kavachomer. So we know the first two. Okay. Why the end meshalman is a kofer? Why does this braita say that Edom Zemin are not made to pay the kofer? Again, where they testified falsely that the guy's ox killed somebody. The reason is kasavri kufra kapara, because the Tana of this Mishnah holds that the kofer is a kapara. It's meant to be done as a kapara for this person that he was careless with his ox and made it possible that it would go out and kill somebody. The Torah holds him responsible and makes him have to have a kapara for himself. Well, their shur didn't kill anybody, so they're not liable for a kapara.
So
therefore, we don't make them pay. As opposed to, in other words, the other way of looking at it would be if we said, if we were to say, as the Gemara is going to discuss now, if we were to say kufra mamona, if we were to say the kofer is essentially like any other payment of mamon for damages, just like you have. If your ox injures somebody, you have to pay him. If you injure somebody, you have to pay him. We learned all about this in Bava Kamma. So the way of looking at it, kufra mamona, says the kofer is the same thing. Your ox killed somebody. His family now is missing a member of their family. They're missing their brother. Therefore, you have to pay them as compensation for the fact that they... If we were to say kufra mamona, then we would say Edom Zemin have to pay it. Same way as if they were to say that his ox injured somebody, and it turns out they're Edom Zemin, they'd have to pay. Same logic if they're saying his ox killed somebody. It would be the same thing. But if we say kufra kapara, if we say it's not essentially to compensate the family, it's rather a kapara for him himself, that he allowed his ox to go wild like that, then the Edom Zemin, they didn't. Their ox didn't kill anybody. Therefore, they're not there. Therefore, you can't hold them. Therefore, you can't make them pay a kofer. And in fact, Mephoshim go on and say further.
It's for their kapara.
No, so Mephoshim go on and say further. The other idea of it is the kapara is basically the pasuk actually says when it talks about this concept of the shur killing somebody. The pasuk says that the shur is killed the gamba olav yumas, and also its owner is put to death. And then the pasuk continues in kofer yushas olav if a kofer is imposed on him. So what does that mean? It doesn't mean you put him to death, but if he wants, he can instead give a kofer. It means he's really chayev misi b'dei shemayim. He should really deserve to be killed by Hashem for allowing his ox to go wild like that. The Hashem, Hashem has rachmonos on him and allows him to instead pay a kofer. Well, the truth of the matter is there was no ox that killed anybody over here because the whole thing was a lie. Therefore, he himself was not chayev misi b'dei shemayim. Therefore, he wouldn't really have had to pay a kofer to get himself out of Misi B'dei Shemayim because the whole thing was false. Therefore, we can't make them pay a kofer either for something that never actually happened.
In other words, what you're saying is it's only if he could be a kofer that they could...
Only if he was really liable could we make them pay, but he's not really liable, yeah. Yeah.
The guy that's dead, but they thought he made the story that was the accident.
What? Oh, you could. Yeah, it could very well be the guy himself. Yeah, it could be the guy is dead. But it could be it was somebody else's ox, it could be it was an ox at Hefker, whatever it is. Besides which, also remember with Edom Zemin, the second set of Edom, when they come and say that the first set are Zemin, they're not saying, we don't know, maybe his ox killed him, maybe it didn't. Maybe he broke Shabbos, maybe he didn't. But you can't say that because you guys were not there at the time. You were with us elsewhere.
So let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
If the second set of Edom comes after the guy was executed.
So we said we don't execute them.
Yeah. Although then you could say that you would have to.
But the Gzeiras HaKotev is that you don't. The Pasuk tells us, Vasisim Lekasha Zomam, which means Velekasha Otha.
Do they get away with it?
The Eibishter will deal with them. But the Eibishter will deal with them, but yeah, as far as Beis Din is concerned, yeah, they get away with it.
Kasha Zomam.
Kasha Zomam, it has to be as they plotted, yeah. Okay. So Kasavri
Kufr.
Yeah, but in other words, as they plotted, in other words, as opposed to if it actually happened. Okay, so Kasavri Kufr Kapara. So our Braitha therefore holds that the Kufr is a Kapara. Bahani, Lapne Kapara. And you know, these guys are not subject to Kapara because they sure didn't kill anybody. And even the guy himself wasn't really Chayat Misavide Shemayim because there was nothing happened. Okay. Man Tana Kufr Kapara. So now we have to ask, fine, which Tana is it that holds this concept that the Kufr is a Kapara as opposed to being a regular monetary payment?
Not all the
Tanaim hold that. Well, on the face of it, not. Amr Rav Chista, Rabbi Shmuel, B'nai Shah, Rabbi Yechon ben Breita. So Rav Chista says that would be according to Rabbi Shmuel, the son of Rabbi Yechon ben Breita. D'tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, when the Pasuk says about this owner of the ox that he has to pay a kofar, the Torah uses the expression, v'nosan pidyo nafsha, he should give the redemption for his soul. What does that mean? Dmei nizik. So the Tanakhama says it means the value of the nizik, the value of the person who was killed. So we figure out that person who was killed, how much would he have been worth as a slave or whatever, and that's the amount we make the mazik pay. Rabbi Shmuel, b'noshe, Rabbi Yechon ben Breita, he made mazik. Whereas Rabbi Shmuel, the son of Rabbi Yechon ben Breita, says you make him pay his own value. He, the mazik, the owner of the animal, you make him pay his value. My love, so shouldn't we assume b'ha'al kamitzli? That must be the underlying machlokas. Why should they be arguing whose value it is? The underlying machlokas must be demar savar kufra mamayna, must be that the Tanakama holds kofer is like any other payment of mamayn. So just like if the guy had been injured and now he's worth $100 less than he would before, you'd pay $100. So now, by the same logic, if he got killed and as a slave he would have been worth $1,000, so you make him pay $1,000. Right. That would be mamayn. Omar Sover.
It's because of the bezin of family members.
No, because of the family members. Omar Sover kofer kapara, whereas Rabbi Shmuel would hold that the kofer is a kapara. Therefore, it doesn't matter how much the nizik was worth. It matters the mazik himself by rights should be killed by Hashem. And instead, we're making him pay the equivalent of his own life, the equivalent of his own value.
Basically,
so therefore you would see that's a question of whether it's mammon or whether it's kapara. No, amar apapun loy, dekula alma kufra kapara. No, everybody might agree. Both these tanoim might agree that the kufra is a kapara. It's not a regular payment of mammon. But the machlokas rather is just that mar sava b'dinizik sheminon. That the Tanakama holds that. How do you accomplish that kapara? By paying the value of the nizik, the value of the person who was killed. Or marsava b'dimazik shemin, and whereas Rabbi Shmuel would hold, how do you accomplish the kapara? By paying your own value.
Says
so Rav Chista had thought that it's machloikas on that. Rav Papa is saying you don't have to say that.
They both believe
that's kapara. My tanayo did abonim. You would have to ask, why do the Chachamim hold, why does the Tanakama hold, that you should pay the value of the nizik as a kapara for yourself, when he's a different person than you? The reason is because they say we make a gzeira shava. Nemer hashosa l'mata, but nemer hashosa l'mayla. You have two psukim close to each other. These are both in Parashas Mishpatim that deal with cases of injuries, and you have in both of them there's a word yoshis or yushas, which means imposed or placed. You have one of them is our pasuk in connection with an ox that killed somebody, and a few psukim earlier was a case where two people were fighting, and one of them hit a pregnant woman and made her miscarry. Where there also the pasuk says you make him pay for the value of the value of the baby.
Which doesn't mean that you figure out how much the value is.
Yeah, you say that's what it means, but it means that value was imposed on him to pay. The word yushas literally means to impose or to place. Yeah, shisa Hashem murder lahem, for example, Hashem imposed a fear on them that they should realize that the Eidishter runs the world. Yeah. So we have a gzeira shava. Nema hashosa l'mata, v'nema hashosa l'mayla. You have the word hashosa. You have the word yushas in our pasuk about the shur. You have the word hashosa yoshis, a few pesukim earlier by the case of the pregnant woman. Ma'ala halam b'ninizik. Just like over there, you obviously value it according to her value. You figure how much would she have been worth as a slave, pregnant, versus not pregnant, and that's the difference you have to pay. Afkan b'ninizik. So the same thing over here. When it comes to the shur, killing somebody also has to be you go according to the nizik. That's according to Rabbi Shmuel. According to the Chachamim, they learn it from this Gzeira Shavah. Rabbi Shmuel, what would Rabbi Shmuel answer to that? he would say, but not in pidyon nafshik zeh. Okay, very nice. You have a kavachom. Yeah, not a kavachom. You have zeder shavah pashasa. The fact is, the pasuk says the word v'nasan pidyon nafshik. He should give the he should give the redemption of his soul. In other words, the one who is giving the kaifer. So it has to mean his own value. Yeah.
Why the chachamim has to give up?
V'rabbanon. So what are the rabbanon answer to that? Ein pidyon nafshik zeh. Sure, of course it says pidyon nafshik, but. And so, of course, the word pidyon nafshei teaches us that it's a kapara, not that it's a regular payment of mammon. Mihu, however, how do we accomplish that kapara? Ki shayminin b'dinizek shayminin. Nevertheless, we're going to use or gzera shava from the word hashasa to say that you use that you pay the value of the nizek, and that is how the kapara is accomplished. So not like Rav Chista wanted to say that if you pay the value of the nizek implies that it's mammon. No, we chachamim say, the chachamim say, we're going to use both. We're going to use the word pidyon nafshei to mean that it's a kapara. That it's a kapara. We're going to use the value is going to be done based on the word hashasa, which means the value of the nizek.
Now, if the person who was killed had such big miles, he was so whatever, he was good hand or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So how was the kapara by him paying when the guy himself was a loser?
Well, that's why what you do is you don't figure their intangible qualities. I mean, yeah, one could be a great tzaddik, the other could be a big rush or whatever. No, we figure out how much would they be worth if they were sold as a slave. Even the greatest Talmud Chacham, the slave, he might be worth a lot because he might have a strong back and whatever, and he might not.
How would you apply this today?
How would you apply this today? Yeah, I don't know. We don't have slaves today. Okay, so I don't know. You'd figure out how much he would be worth if he were to be employed. I have no idea. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, it's a knas anyway. We don't have a Beis Din that doesn't have smicha, which we don't have. Smicha nowadays is not able to judge the knas. So then they would have to figure it out somehow. I don't know.
It'll be that problem.
They could always take him to Saudi Arabia or one of those countries where slavery is still legal and figure it out that way. I don't know. Okay. All right. Fine. So that establishes, so now we know that's why the Brai said that Edim Zomim are not made to pay this, because it's a kapara, according to Rav Chista, only according to Rabbi Shmuel, according to Rav Papa, according to everybody, it's a kapara, and we can't make the Edim pay a kapara. Because they themselves, their ox didn't kill anybody, and even he himself, his ox didn't kill anybody. So there's no, yeah. Okay.
So in Shemayim, what happens?
So in Shemayim, what happens? According to the Rambam, they're given Malchus. So they get a punishment right down here on earth. According to the Rambam, if they don't get Malchus, okay, so then I guess the Eidus will deal with them. I don't know. They're still possible Eidus. They're still, yeah. Okay. Case number four, we said in the Braisa, the Indim Kohen be'Eved Ivri. We said in the Braisa that we do not sell them as an Eved Ivri if they testify that the guy stole money, and had he not had enough money, he would have had to be sold as a slave. If it turns out they're Edim Zomim, we don't do that to them. We instead, they pay the amount, or they pay the amount that they claim he stole. They pay that amount that they claim he stole, and if they don't have, then maybe instead we give them Malchus. Okay. So now Rav Hamnuna thought to say, Hanimili Hecha de Islay Liday, that only applies if the person who they claim is a Ganav actually has the value, actually has enough money to be able to pay it back. But he himself wouldn't have had to be sold had it turned out that their aegis was true. So they're coming and saying Yankel stole $100. So Rav Hamnuna is saying, fine, if Yankel actually has $100 where he would have been able to pay it back, fine, it turns out these Edim Zomim are liars, then fine, we wouldn't sell them, even if they themselves don't have $100 themselves. Because fine, then you would say, he himself wasn't in line to be sold, because he himself had the money, therefore, it is not right that we should sell them instead, even though they can't afford it. But Rav Hamnuna thought to say, what if Yankel himself does not have $100 himself, so he, Taka, would have been in line to be sold. So we should argue, maybe even though the Edim themselves, these Edim Zomim do in fact have that kind of money themselves. Mizdabni, maybe we should sell them because they were trying to get him sold. Therefore, Kasha Zaman would be, yeah. Amalei Rava, but Rava says to him, why? The labor lay, why can't the Edim Zomim argue back? Why should we be sold? After all, if you, Yankel, had that money, had that $100, you wouldn't have been sold. Well, very well, we have that money. We shouldn't have to be sold.
Yeah, but the logic behind it is
on the one hand, the logic is, on the other hand, the fact is they can argue that The fact of the matter is, what they can argue, Mefoshim Tai Chao, but what they can argue is essentially the selling of him is kind of a side effect of their aedus. Their main aedus is that he stole $100.
Yeah, exactly.
A side effect it would be if he doesn't have the money, he gets sold. They can argue the side effect we shouldn't be held, where we shouldn't be put on us, because in fact we have the money. We would be able to pay for it. And some of the Mefoshim say even if they Tata didn't, even if neither one had the money, neither Yankel has it, nor they have it, maybe still.
But wait a minute. If he has the money and he has to pay, they should also pay the money. I mean, it should
they should have to pay the money,
yeah,
right.
Sure.
But that, for sure they have to pay the money. But we say, therefore,
if you have the money,
even if he didn't have the money, instead of selling them, we just take the $100 from them.
But he could have a family. He could have taken away from his family. A guy would be taken away from his family. And we sold for 2 years.
There's a limit how much intangible things you can go. I mean, you know what the Rishonim talk about, I think the Ritva talked about in our Mishnah, when those Edim were claiming the guy, the Ben Grusha or Ben Chalutza, that he's a Koyan, who's a Cholol or whatever, why are we only giving them Malkus? Why don't we make them pay for the fact? Conceivably, the guy could have been getting over the years tens of thousands of dollars worth of Truma and Meiser and other Matnes Gehorna and whatever. But there's a limit. You can't calculate intangible things that may or may not have happened. But intangible, and I shouldn't say intangible, but things that may or may not have happened, not necessarily we have gotten truma. It's not some fixed amount that you can evaluate to a certain extent, but not
you
yet.
So the
Bezim was able to do that on their own.
Ella Omar Rova. No. So rather, we can't say like that. We can't say that was even Rav Hamnuna's Svara, because that kind of Svara is that if he didn't have money and they have money, that the Brice has to tell us we still don't sell them. There's no reason to think that way. Obviously not. Rava has a point. That's Rava's point, that they can say, well, we have the money. There's not even a half a minute to sell us, even though he didn't. Ella, Svara, Rav Hamnuna Lamema. Rather, what we can say is Rav Hamnuna thought to say, when do we say we wouldn't sell them? If either he, Yankel, has the money, or they, the Edom Zayman, Reuven and Shimon, have money, then fine, we're not going to sell them. We're going to just, because if it turned out to be true, he would have. If either one had. But if Yankel doesn't have the money and they don't have the money, maybe then Mizdavni, maybe then Rav Hamnuna says maybe then they should be sold. Amalei Rava, and Rava says no, because even in that case, not, because v'nimka v'gnevasei amarachmana, because the pasuk says that a person is sold for his theft, implying v'gnevasei v'loy bizmama, a person can only be sold for his gneva, not for being an aid zonin. So therefore, an aid
zayman is a gneva.
But it's not. It's an indirect. It's a different kind of gneva. But it's not the same kind of gneva.
So
we're going to make them pay the money. We may instead, according to the Rambam, we give them malchus instead in a case like this. But that's it. We do not sell them as avodim because they didn't actually do the gneva. Then we said in the Braise, Mishum Rabbi Akiva, Amru V'chola, we said in the name of Rabbi Akiva, they said a fifth rule, that Edom Zayman do not pay based on their own admission. My time is the Rabbi Akiva, so what's Rabbi Akiva's reason? Because Kosova Knossahu, because he holds the whole concept of Edom Zayman paying is, or maybe even getting Misa, is a Knas. It's not that, again, we can argue when it comes to the Edom Zayman, is it mamon? Is it they were going to do a hezek of a certain kind, therefore they have to pay the value of that hezek, like any other mazik? Or is it a knas that the Torah is putting an extra penalty on them for the fact that they had the chutzpah to go and lie like that? Rabbi Akiva holds that it's a knas. Therefore, knas in the Shalom Apiatsma. And we have a general rule throughout Shas that a person does not pay a knas on his own admission. Same thing as, for example, the double payment that a ganav pays. Or the kefal above, very good, above a chamisha, the four or five times we shepherd or stole the animal, all those are knas. If a person were to come to Beis Din one day and say, I stole Yankel's cow and I'm sorry and I want to do tshuva, they will make him pay back the value of the cow. They will not make him pay the kefal or the above a chamisha, because that's a knas, and you don't pay a knas based on your own admission. Edim have to come to Beis Din and say that.
Yeah.
Omer of Nachman, Teda, sort of Nachman, Omer Rabba. So Rabba says, we can see that very easily. Teda, you can prove that. Shirele also Meisev and Arogav of Mashaman. After all, you see, the Edom Zomin did not actually accomplish anything, because by definition, we said before, Hoguin Nehadogin, Tasha Zomon, Velay Kasha Osa, if they actually carry out what they wanted to accomplish, they don't get punished. They only get punished when it was they gave the Edos but the sentence hasn't actually been carried out yet, and yet we see they can still be executed or pay, as the case may be. So we see it's not a regular kind of hezek. If it was a regular kind of hezek, you would only do it after they actually accomplished it. Amar Rav Nachman Tegan, Rav Nachman says, you can see that this must be true. Share Mammon, Biad Bailev, or Mashaman, because after all, the money is still in the hands of the original owner, and yet we're making them pay. Now, the question is, my near delay also Maisa. So what does that amount to? Meaning that they didn't actually accomplish anything? They didn't actually force Yankel to pay the other guy? Hainu de Rabba. And that's saying the same thing as Rabba did, just in different words.
That what?
If Rav Nachman means the fact that Rabba said they didn't do a Maisa, meaning they testified that Yankel owes $100 and it turns out that he does not, and we make them pay. Rav Nachman is saying you should realize that it's not a regular case of hezek, therefore it must be a knas, because Yankel still has his $100 in his hands, we didn't make him pay it yet, then that amounts to the same thing as what Rabba said. It's just two different ways of saying the same thing. Yeah, Painu de Rabba. The answer is Eim Avchein Omer Rav Nachman. You're right, it doesn't, not Rav Nachman said it as a separate statement. Rav Nachman said the same thing as Rabba, just in different words.
Okay.
By the way, it's interesting, you know, Who do they actually give the money to in a case like this? If they testified, let's say, that Yankel stole $100 or whatever, we would assume, when we learn about Adam Zeman, we would assume they pay Yankel because they were trying to take it away from him.
Right.
The Sefer Yireim from one of the Rishonim actually says, there's not really any clear source that actually says so in so many words. And he wants to say that maybe it would be actually that the Adim would have to take that money and give it to Beis Din. Because it would be a knas to penalize them for testifying falsely.
Okay.
Omer of Yehuda Amar Dan.
The courts that do that also. I was in the court, they gave someone, he had to pay a knot, I didn't get it, they court got it.
There is that, yes?
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's American law, I'll have to hold it. Omer of Yehuda Amar Dan. Eid Zoymen Meshalom Lafi Chelkai. And Eid Zoymen pays according to his portion. So that's what we have to figure. My Meshalom Lafi Chelkai, what does that mean? Do we mean that, let's say, if you had two Adim that came and said that Yankel stole $100, does it mean each of them, if it turns out they're Adim Zomim, each of them is going to pay $50 if there were two Adim? We don't need Rav Yehuda to be telling us that. Tanena, we learn that later on in our Perek in a Mishnah. Mishalshin Ramaman, Vein Mishalshin Ramalkas. We divide up the Mammon, we do not divide up Malchus. Mishalshin actually says two explanations. One is Mishalshin means, literally Mishalshin means we make thirds. But what does that mean? There aren't necessarily three Adim. So Rashi's first explanation is we make the Beis Din to be a shalish. We make the Beis Din to be like a broker between them, and they're the ones who broker the deal and make it that each aid, if it was two Adim, each one pays 50%. If it was three Adim, each one pays 33%, etc. The second explanation of Rashi is Mishalshin just means suppose there were three Adim, each one pays one third. And if there were four Adim, each one would pay one quarter, etc. The point is that that's what we do. We don't say, so they said that Yankel owes $100. We don't make Reuven and Shimon, the two Adim, each pay $100. Each of them pays $50. But the Mishnah says we do not do that when it comes to Malchus. If they were coming and saying that Yankel ate Chelev, which would make him Chayev to 39 Malchus, we don't say we're going to give one of the Adim 19 and the other one 19 or whatever, however it's split. Each one gets the full 39 or as much as they're able to bear. We'll learn later on the comparison. The difference is because the difference is because when it comes to money, they were trying to make him lose a certain amount of money. They were trying to make him lose $100, let's say. So therefore, it's only fair. He's not going to get $200 out of it. He should get $100 out of it. Or, again, according to the Sefer Yireim, he's not getting it. But whatever, the point is, they shouldn't be held responsible for more than $100. As opposed to Malchus, there's a big difference between the first Halkar and the second. If you're going to be Mishalshin, the Malchus, and say, let's say there were three Adim, so you're going to be each one of them 13, each one is going to feel the first 13 Malchus. None of them are going to feel the 14th one, none of them are going to feel the 15th one or whatever, so you can't do that. They were trying to make the guy's going to feel the 14th and the 15th, et cetera, all the way to 39. Therefore, that's what you got to do.
How does it not feel?
Each Malchus feels different than the previous one because it hurts worse and worse.
Right.
So therefore, if you were to say that, let's say there were three Adim came and say that Yankel ate Chela, and it turns out they're Adim Zemmin, if you were to divide the 39 Malchus among the three of them and say each one of them gets 13, what's going to happen is each one of them is not going
to
get the full effect of it.
Right. They have to give them each.
Therefore, you have to give them each the full 39.
The same reasoning with $100.
No, because giving the 51st dollar is not really that much more of a pain than giving the 50th dollar.
Yeah, it's more of a
pain. Yeah, okay, but not as much. All right. So the question is, so if that's all Rav Yehuda means, then he's not telling us anything that the Mishnah didn't already tell us. So let's say maybe Rabbi Yehuda is talking about a case. Suppose that only one of the Edim turned out to be an Eid Zomim. So other Edim, again, the classic case of Edim Zomim is Reuven and Shimon come to Beis Din and say Yankel did such and such. Levi and Yehuda come and say, you, Reuven and Shimon, couldn't be giving Eidus on that because Imanu HaYisim, you were with us elsewhere on that day. That's when we say Reuven and Shimon are Edim Zomim. What if they come and say, you, Reuven, weren't here on that date because you were with us in California. But Shimon, we don't know. Maybe you were here, maybe you weren't.
Who said it in this case?
1 second. Okay. The Meshalim Palgadi day, which maybe then we would say that Reuven is liable to pay his half of the amount, and Shimon is not. The problem is, me Meshalim, how could he pay in that case? Vatanya. What we learn in a Braisa, Ein Eid Zomim Meshalim Mammon Adji Yizomu Shneim. We do not make an Eid Zomim pay anything unless both of them are shown to be Eidim Zomim. Sure, the Eidus is possible because we passed one of them, but you don't make them Eidim Zomim. Amar Rava, so Rava says the case that Rabbi Yehuda is talking about, where we say that an Eid Zomim pays his proportional amount, would be Ba'omer Eidus Sheker He'Adji. Suppose that after giving the Eidus, one of the Eidim speaks up and says, actually, the Eidus that I gave is false. And then later on, Tosfos goes and continues with the case. Later on, Edim come and make them to be Edim Zomim. So because they were Edim Zomim, they should have to pay. But because he first retracted his Edus, then we make him pay his amount. At that point, the fact that they're Edim Zomim is neither here nor there. You don't have an Edus. You don't have
any. Really, an Edim Zomim, if you retract.
Well, that's like the question. How can he retract? Kol Kaminei. How do we accept such a thing from him? The din is Kivin Shehigid Shomei Nechozer Umagid. Once an Ed is given Edus, he's not allowed to retract it. So therefore, if he were to say that I lied, okay, maybe he could be mechayiv himself money. Sure, of course he can be mechayiv. But the Eidus still exists. Beis Din will discard, the judges, the Beis Din will disregard that statement of his that I lied and say, doesn't matter, you gave Eidus, you gave Eidus. We have to go according to that. They have to cross-examine him at the beginning, but once he said Eidus and Beis Din cross-examined him and accepted it, if they later on say we're lying, it doesn't matter. We learned in the story of Shimon ben Shattach, we learned at Sanhedrin over there, about Shimon ben Shattach's son, where Edim falsely came and accused Shimon ben Shattach's son of doing some aveira that made him chayiv misa. And then afterwards, when they're taking him out to execute him, he says that my death should be a kapara for all my aveiras except for this one, because I was railroaded in this case. Or whatever the lashon he uses over there is that if the Eidus was true, then my mitzvah should not be a kapara for this aveira that I did, that I supposedly did. But if the Eidus is not true, then my mitzvah should be a kapara for everything I did, and the Eidim should be the ones responsible because they shouldn't have a kapara. And they get frightened by that, and they realize, what do? We testified falsely. We're now going to have a guy killed for no reason, and they want to retract the Eidus, but it can't be done. Kivin shehigin shuvein echozer umagin. No, it wasn't. That's it. They went and executed him. The medrash,
they went.
They went, yeah.
To execute.
Yeah, they went. They actually did. They did. They ended up executing, yeah.
Because the
din was done. If other Edim had come and been mazim or makish or whatever, the original Edim or whatever, then fine. But nothing.
Over here, because why we skip? Because maybe they got scared them to kill him.
Whatever it is, the reason is, once the Torah says, Kivin Shehigin Shogun Echazer Umagin. Once an Ed has come and said Edus and Beis Din, and it was cross examined and accepted, that's it. The Ed cannot undo what he said.
No, that's only if there was. Passed, that was the outcome, but here the outcome wasn't done yet.
No, it's fine, but nevertheless, though, the Eidus itself cannot be retracted. Right, in that case, no, but in that case,
well, there's a difference between actions that they.
No, but it doesn't matter. Once an Eid gives Eidus and based it and it's accepted, he can't retract it. So now Edim Zomim came afterwards, fine. I mean, Edim to be mazim them, fine, came afterwards. Good, they'll be regular Edim Zomim. We're going to ignore the fact that he already said, I lied. And therefore, of course, he's going to have to pay his part. Each of them is going to have to pay their part.
So in this case, he died, killed Shimon Meshach.
That killed Shimon Meshach.
So
they got what they deserved, in based on Shemaila, I guess.
They couldn't do it.
Because they weren't Edim Zomim in that case. They themselves admitted that they were liars. Yeah. So whatever happened to them in based on Shemaila, we don't know. But I'm sure we can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe we can't imagine.
It's hard to understand. Here, they're both saying and breathing, I think the
Yerushalmi actually says that the son himself says to Shimon Shaddach, go ahead and do it. The Torah says that the Torah says that their Eidus has to still be accepted, and that's how it is. I'll go die. I'll kiddush Hashem because that's the halacha. Yes. Okay.
Sounds good.
Yeah. Ella, no. Rabbi Yehuda's case must be ba'omer he'adnu v'huzamnu v'beis simplein. No, rather the case that Rabbi Yehuda is talking about must be that the aid or aidim come and say in a different beis din, we gave aiders in such and such a beis din, and we were declared aidim zonin. So you have Reuben and Shimon came and testified in the beis din in Crown Heights and said such and such. Then later on they go to the beis din in Flatbush and say in Crown Heights they found us aidim zonin. The problem with that, and then we would say we make him pay his portion. The problem, what?
Why would you say that?
Let's say they want to do tshuva.
They don't want to have it
over their head. The problem with that is command the loy kibah. That statement then seems to be not like Rabbi Akiva. And the bride said before, di kibah kibah ha amar afen mishalom af yatzmon. Because we said before, Rabbi Akiva says they would not pay in a case like that. Unless it would have to be after they were declared Adam Zimmin and the Beis Din in Crown Heights, then the guy would have to take them to Beis Din, either at that Beis Din or a different one, and say, listen, you guys were Adam Zimmin against me, now pay up. If not, if they themselves were to go ahead to a different Beis Din and volunteer that they were Adam Zimmin, Rabbi Akiva said we wouldn't make them pay. So what does Rabbi Yehuda say? That each Adam Zimmin pays his portion. El or no?
What he added?
Rabbi Yehuda is contradicting Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Yehuda is an Amora, Rabbi Akiva is a Tana. Fine, he should say. And we don't find anybody who disagrees. We don't see that they disagree with Rabbi Akiva. The Braisa had mentioned four things, and Rabbi Akiva adds a fifth one. Implicitly, maybe they disagree with him, but they didn't say so in so many words. We should try to assume that Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Rab, holds according to Rabbi Akiva as well. El or no? But Omer he'adne v'huzamne were based in plenty v'chu yavnu mamein. Suppose that now they come and say, in the Beis Din in Flatbush, let's say, they come and say, not only we were declared Adam Zungman in the Beis Din in Crown Heights, but also Yankel then took us to Beis Din in front of that same Beis Din and said, no, you were Adam Zungman against me, pay up. And the Beis Din in Crown Heights declared us guilty. And now they say, now one of them comes to the Beis Din in Flatbush and then tells that over to the Beis Din over there, then we're going to say he's going to be mechuyev to pay money on the basis of that.
He didn't pay.
No, he didn't pay yet. The Beis Din in Crown Heights said he's obligated to pay. He didn't actually take it out of his pocket.
Why
didn't so they went to Flatbush, let's say. So Salkadad Hamini, you would think to say, Kibin de Lachabra le Mosim Chayevle, since he's not able to be Machayev the other guy with that, because he can't give Eidos about the other guy. He can't give it. Reuben can't give Eidos about Shimon, that in front of the Beis Din in Flatbush, that Shimon is liable to pay. You would think maybe Reuben himself should not be liable. Sure, when the Beis Din in Crown Heights gets around to enforcing their p'sak din, then fine, he'll have to pay. But until they do that, maybe we shouldn't obligate Reuben to pay just because he went to a different Beis Din and was mowed down all of this. Kamash Malon, that is Rabbi Yehuda's point, that we do make him pay already at that point, just because he himself said that all of this happened already. Shimon,
even prior to the Beis Din of Crown Heights.
No, after the Beis Din of Crown Heights, already said that he's an aid zonim, and they judged the second case then and said that he's actually chayav to pay.
They didn't pay yet.
He didn't pay yet, so now he went to Flatbush, and the Beis Din of Flatbush can now make him pay.
Himself.
On the basis of him himself. They can't do anything to Shimon, because Shimon's not there. But yeah, that's the Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav's point.
That's what he added.
Mishnah says, suppose that Adam come to Beis Din and they testify that Pliny, that Yankel, divorced his wife. And we know that he did not pay her huksuba. How do we know? Because Rashi gives an example. The Yankel himself says in Beis Din, I never divorced her. Saying I never divorced her amounts to saying I never paid her huksuba. If he didn't divorce her, obviously he had no reason to pay her huksuba. Now, the problem with that is we can't just say that we should make the Adam Zonman pay the value of the Ksuba. Because how do we know the Ksuba would have ever been paid? Remember, the Ksuba is only paid if the husband dies before his wife or divorces her. If she dies before him, there's no Ksuba. So we can't make them pay the full value of the Ksuba, because not necessarily would they have made him.
We don't know if she
would have ended up collecting it or not.
If she dies, doesn't go to the
Yashin, but it doesn't happen.
Well, there is Ksubas Benin Dichrin. We learned about in Ksubas. There is a special Takana de Rabbanan that if she has sons from her marriage with this husband, then they Yashin the amount that would have been a Ksuba. But that's a different matter. That's we're talking about. That doesn't come out. That's not something that he has to pay anyway. That's something that when his estate is divided, it's divided, and they get that extra portion among the other Yoshim. We're talking about what they would have made the husband have to pay out. So the question is, now, on the other hand, though, conceivably he could die in the near future, or divorce her in the near future, and have to pay her entire ksuba.
But that's not sure.
But we don't know. That's the point. We don't know. So on the one hand, it could be that there's no ksuba. On the other hand, there's a full ksuba. How do we evaluate such a thing? What we do is, Beis Din has to evaluate, Kama Adam Reutze Litin B'Ksubasa Shol Du, how much would a person be willing to pay in order to buy out the option in her ksuba, Sheim Nis'almna in Nis'gausha, that this way he'll be able to, we learned about this in ksuba a lot, the concept that a woman can sell her ksuba, which again, the buyer is taking a risk. If she's widowed or divorced, the guy is going to collect the entire amount. On the other hand, if she dies, her husband yarishes it back from her, and fine, eventually it goes to her sons. If there's been indifference, that's another matter, but then he's not out anything. So the purchaser is taking a risk. That's the amount we figure out.
It's very hard. Every purchaser would have a different price.
So that's what we're going to see in the Gemara, how we do that exactly. Now, the thing is, so Rashi gives a long explanation over here, and Tosfos expands on it, that there's two different ways of, there's a couple of ways of looking at it. We have to keep in mind as follows, that, first of all, there's the point that the Mishnah said we don't know which of them is going to die first. There's another consideration, which is, as long as the husband is alive, and as long as they're still married, then the husband is entitled to peiros from her, he has a certain piece of land that was designated that he's going to pay off the ksuba with, but all this time, as long as they're married, he's able to have peiros from it. And so there's that. There's also the fact he actually owns that property. She might eventually collect it if the ksuba is going to be paid off.
So therefore, the
fact that he's taking payers means, in other words, that if he were to sell his interest in it, he's going to get more money for it than she would get for her interest in it.
If he were to sell
his interest in this suba to a third party, so Tosfos gives an example over here that if he were to sell to a third party the potential amount he has over here, again, that potentially his wife might die and he might never have to pay this suba. So then he could get for a thousand dollars. Tosfos gives the example. Let's say the ksuba was 100 mana, which is 10,000 zuz. He could conceivably sell his interest over here for half of that, for 50,000 zuz. If he were to sell on the basis of his suffix, that the purchaser is now going to be able to eat the payrus instead of the husband. And that there's the chance that the wife might die before the husband does, and therefore the ksuba is never paid out. So now the guy is taking a risk. He's putting in $50,000 on the chance that he might eventually get a property that's worth $100,000 because he wouldn't have to give it to the wife, because she'd be dead. And that meanwhile he gets paid. So he's willing to pay $50,000 for that possibility. 50 mana for the possibility of winning 100. Plus the fact that he gets paid from it right now.
Regardless of her age.
Age is a different factor. That's a matter that the Rif talks about. We'll talk about that later. Right now,
years old.
Hold on. Right now we're talking the points of Rashi and Tosfos. I'll explain soon about the matter of her age and other.
Right now.
Yeah. Okay. On the other hand, if we look at her side of it, again, with her side of it, there is the possibility she might eventually collect it because her husband might divorce her or might die. On the other hand, though, A, it has to then be collected from him, which is not so easy. It's his possession right now. Number two, the purchaser isn't going to get the payers from it because the payers still belong to the husband. So therefore, if she were to sell her interest in her ksuba, it would sell for less. It would sell, let's say, for 40 mana instead of 50.
Because the buyer isn't
getting payers right now. Plus, eventually, if he wants to collect on this property, if her husband dies or divorces her, then he has to have the bother of going to the husband's yoshim or to the husband himself and telling him, "Hey, you know, I bought your wife's interest in this property. I bought her ksuba. Therefore, I'm entitled to this property, and to get it out of him is not so easy necessarily. So therefore, he'll buy it at a discount instead of paying $50,000 like for the husband. He'd pay $40,000 for the same.
Can you force the husband to get the payers?
No. Well, if the husband dies or the husband divorces her, the ksuba has to be paid. Sure, this guy is now in the place.
What about the payrus?
So the payrus, up until now, the payrus belonged to the husband.
No, but if the wife sells...
If the wife sells her... If she's not selling this property because the property itself doesn't belong to her. She's selling the ksuba, meaning the possibility that one, the future, that she's selling a future over here, that in the future you might be able to take over this land, and once that happens, you get the payers as well.
Right, so but, once she passes away, how is the first of the ksuba...
If she passed away, there's no ksuba. If she passed away, then the guy lost his money. He lost his investment. If the husband dies or divorces her, then now all of a sudden he has a property. Now he's entitled to a property worth $100,000,
yeah,
where he paid only $40,000 for it. So he got himself a bargain.
Right. And how is he going to collect the Paris?
Because at that point, the property is eventually going to go to him. No, he goes to base and he tells them, he shows them the relevant documents or whatever, and he takes over the property, including the Ben from the Nun. He gets the Paris. So therefore, so we have two ways of looking at it. One, so we have one way of looking at it is we look at the husband's potential interest in the ksuba, which in this scenario over here would be $50,000, and therefore we'd make the Edim Zomim pay $50,000. The other possibility is we look at the wife's interest in it, which is, therefore, we said, let's say, $40,000. And we can also look at it, we can also look at it, actually, Tosfos points out, what we would do is, we could say then, we subtract that amount from the husband's interest. We would say, $100,000 minus $40,000, which is her potential, interest, the potential amount she could have sold it for, is $60,000. So how do we figure it out exactly? So Ketzad Shaman, how do we figure this out? Rav Chista Omer Rav Chista Babal. So Rav Chista says we look at the husband's side of it, which would mean in this case $50,000.
Because that
again, the husband conceivably could have sold his interest in this property on the chance that his wife is going to die first. And therefore, that he'll be able to take it back. On the other hand, on the chance that the guy is buying it, on the chance that the husband will die first, and he'll be able to take over this property. So therefore, you make the Edim Zomim, in that case, pay $50,000. Rav Nosson Bar Oshia says, rather, you look at the wife's side of it, which would be the $40,000. Or actually, as Tosfos is saying, it actually comes the other way around. What you do is you subtract 40 from 100. The full amount of the ksuba was 100. You subtract 40 from it. Therefore, you make the Edim Zomim pay 60 instead of 50. Which is a bigger chumra. Amar Rav Papa v'isho v'ksubasa. Rav Papa says, I agree with Rav Nosson. That's why it says Amar Rav Papa rather than Rav Papa Omer, which would imply that he's arguing. Rav Papa is not a third opinion over here. The usual rule is when we have Amar Rav Pliny, it means he's not arguing with the previous opinion. When it's Rav Pliny Omer, it means he's arguing with the previous opinion. So we had Amar Rav Chista, which is the first opinion. We have Rav Nosson Bar Oshia Omer, meaning that he's disagreeing with Rav Chista. Then we have Amar Rav Papa, which implies that Rav Papa is not arguing with the previous opinion, Rav Nosson Bar Oshia. He's adding to it. He's explaining what would Rav Nosson say that you pay. I agree with Rav Nosson that you go according to the Isha, Ubiksubasa, but furthermore, within that, you only do the actual Ksuba itself. You do not take into consideration Nichse Melug. This is how Rashi explains. Even though it's true that if they had that if their testimony had been true, she would also be collecting her nichsim alug. She'd be taking back her nichsim alug from her husband, the property that all this time that she brought into the marriage, which the husband had paid us of, but she owned the group, and now she gets. If it was true, now if they'd actually divorced her, right? Like this, so Edim Zomim. We don't make these Edim pay the nichsim alug. Rashi says because they can argue we were only testifying about the ksuba. We didn't know about the Nichsim alone. Now, that's one explanation. Then Rashi says other explanations, which is that Baba'al means we look at what's the quality of the Nechasim of the husband. Is it good quality idiot? Is it bad quality ziburis? Because when you're wanting to sell your interest in this property, the Lakeach is going to be interested in that kind of thing. And then Rav Nosson would say that you look at specifically the piece of property. Rav Nosson and Rav Papa comes to add that you would look specifically at the piece of property that was designated for the ksuba. Meaning you would look at the actual value. What kind of land is that? Is it idis or is it bainanis or ziburis? Okay, Rashi says I don't like that explanation. Then you have, there's a lot of the Rishonim, and starting with the Rif, who have a whole different explanation of Baba'al versus Ba'isha, which is closer to what you were saying. We have to consider, when we say Baba'al, means we look at what is the husband's situation. Is he old? In that case, it's much more likely he's going to die soon, and therefore there's going to be a ksuba to be paid. Or is he young? Is he healthy? Is he sick? Is he an easily angered person who's much more likely to divorce his wife? Remember, before Chaim Rebbe Negoshim, he didn't need the wife's permission to receive a gift. So that's what Rav Chista would be saying, you go according to that. Rav Nosson Bar Oshia would be saying you go according to her side of things. You look at her age and health and whatever. And
you
all,
need to look at both.
Because,
why don't we say just one
because
or the
other? The point of Nas and Ba'oshia, the primary thing is you look at her because her situation is the one that's more likely to make the difference over here whether the Ksuba is going to be paid if she's likely to die sooner. And Rav Papa adds on that, when Rav Papa says the issue of Ksubasa, according to that explanation, and this is how the Rambam passes it, it means you consider another factor as well. How large of a Ksuba are we talking about? We all know that, for example, when you have these Chinese auctions, for example, for all the mosques around here, if they're offering a prize that's worth $100, you're not likely to bother with it because what are you going to get out of it? Sahal, you're going to get $100. On the other hand, if they're saying there's a grand prize of $10,000, then you're much more willing to pay towards it because hey, you have the chance of winning a $10,000. That's a nice chunk of change.
Dang.
Same thing over here. Then when it comes to the ksuba, we have to consider not only the wife's health and age and whatever, we also have to consider the size of the ksuba because that will affect how much a potential buyer would be willing to pay for it. If the ksuba is only worth the basic 200 zuz, a person is not willing to risk their money that much for it because what am I going to get out of it? 200 zuz is not much. On the other hand, if the ksuba is 10,000 zuz or if the ksuba is 10,000 zuz or whatever, he's willing to take more of a risk and then willing to put more money into it.
That is all the same, right?
Well, and we write into the ksuba the certain fixed amount. Yeah, okay. All right. Mishnah continues.
Can the wife adjust the amount of the ksuba if she marries someone who's very wealthy today? Why would the ksuba be 200 zuz or 100 zuz?
Yeah, okay. In theory, it could be, but practically speaking, they always write it as a
ksuba.
In principle, it could be changed, but practically speaking,
saying,
okay. I mean, a lot of times, I'm given to understand that a lot of times nowadays, ksubas are not collected for one reason or another anyway. So I don't know, really. But we talked about in ksubas, by the way, what the actual value of the ksuba is in present-day money. There's a tshuva from Rav Moshe where he points out, you have to consider, are you talking about the value of the actual silver, or are you talking about its purchasing power? If you're talking about the value of the actual silver, in modern terms, it might be like $75 or so. It's nothing. If you're talking about... Yeah. Because there's 200 kuken of silver that we write into the ksuba is not really all that much. For a Sfardish ksuba, it would be even less, because Sfardim hold according to an opinion that the zuzim and the ksuba are ones that are mostly made out of copper and only have a little silver in them. But on the other hand, if you go according to the purchasing power, 200 zuz in those days was enough to live on for a year, then it would be a couple of tens of thousands of dollars. Yeah,
50 grand.
Yeah, it would be like 30 or 50 grand or whatever, yeah. Right. So then, yeah, okay. All right. Mishnah says, Me'idin on a b'ish point, ishu chayv chaver elef zuz. Now suppose Edom come to Beis Din, and they give Eders that a person owes another person a thousand. Reuven owes Shimon 1,000 zuz al menas listen le mikanvad 30 yom, with the condition that he was supposed to repay him the 1,000 zuz within the next 3 days. Whereas now the Reuven agrees, I taka do owe that money to Shimon. However, it wasn't in the next 30 days. He says mikanvad eser shon. Yeah, he says it was supposed to be that I'm going to pay it in 10 years from now. And it turns out they're 80%. So again, we can't make them pay the whole Elof Zuz because the fact is he was going to have to pay the Elof Zuz eventually. So how do we figure it out? So what Beis Din does is they evaluate. You figure out how much would a person be willing to pay that he should have 1,000 zuz in his possession, between the difference, how much he'd be willing to pay to have those 1,000 zuz for 30 days versus how much would he be willing to pay for having them for 10 years. So many of the Mefarshim understand that basically what we're dealing with here is with a species of ribbit. Now, we learned in Bava Masiyah in Ezer Neshech that an arrangement like that, to be able to, that you'll pay that you'll pay a different amount if you pay now versus later, gets into trouble with ribbit. Nevertheless, though, we still have to figure that out, because after all, the guy conceivably could have used that money. He could have lent it to a goy at Ribis, for example, so he could still have made that extra value out of it, and therefore the agent would have to pay that difference. Other Mefarshim say, rather, we're not talking about that. We're talking about, rather, let's say, how much would a person be willing to pay? If a person had borrowed 1,000 zuz from somebody else, you could have, conceivably, where he could make a deal with the malveh. If I pay you off now, you'll give me a discount. If I pay you off now, I won't have to pay you as much as I would have if I have to pay you at the end of the term. And that's not ribbis, because you're not paying anything extra.
It is ribbis.
No, it's not. So therefore, our Mishnah could be talking about that. Yeah.
This kind of cash flow. No.
No. Question. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Fine. Okay, so now the Gemara is going to bring up a point in Halacha as far as the dinim of Shemitah that's going to relate back to our Mishnah. our Mishnah had mentioned 10 years. That naturally brings up the question of Shemitah, which is every 7 years. Amar of Yehuda, Amar of Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, rather. Hamal ve'et chaveda le'esa shanim. If a person lends somebody else money with the deal that he's going to pay him back in 10 years, Shvius Meshamatzai. Shvius Shmita canceled that debt, obviously, if he didn't make a prusable or whatever. Now, even though it is true that now when Shmita comes, the 10 years are not up yet, there's no... Now, what does the Torah say? The Shmita Ksufim is because lo yigos. You're not allowed to demand repayment from the other guy. In this case, you can't demand repayment yet. If you were to demand repayment from him come Shmita, he would say, 10 years aren't up yet. So even though now there's no lo yigos, eventually there is going to be a lo yugos. Eventually there's going to come, 10 years are going to be up. You're going to be able to come knocking on the guy's door and say, "New, where's my money?" Therefore, Rabbi Huda holds, Shmuel holds, that therefore, even as of now, even when the first Shmita comes, the debt is canceled. Because eventually it would have come to lo yugos.
What about if you have a Shmita and a Yovel?
Yovel is nothing. Yovel doesn't do anything as far as Shmita is concerned. All the Shmita does.
What about the possible way about the people who want to lend
that money? So that's why Hillel made the prusable. But wait, well, yeah. Okay. Masiv Rav Kahana. So Rav Kahana says, what are you talking about? Our Mishnah said, Oimnim kam adam reitza litin viyu elef zuz viyadoi ben litin mikan vad lamad yoimu ben litin mikan vad esashonim. We said that you evaluate how much a person would be willing to pay for the difference between having 1,000 zuz as a loan for 30 days versus 10 years. 10 years, obviously a loan can exist for 10 years. If you're going to tell us that Shmita canceled such a loan, Kulunami Bari Shalomila, he would have to pay everything. And the Adam Zemmin would have to pay everything. Because like this, they were claiming that the guy has to pay the loan now, before Shmita, and therefore the Taka has to pay the whole Elef Zuz. In fact, it was only going to be due 10 years from now, by which time Shmita would have canceled it and he would have had to pay nothing. What do you mean you figure out the time value of money? They claimed he has to pay 1,000 zuz. It turns out he wouldn't have had to pay 1,000 zuz because it would have been canceled by Shmita. And yet the Mishnah is not saying that. Clear contradiction. The Mishnah is saying we only have to pay the difference in the time value of money. Why? According to what Rabbi Yehuda is saying, they should have to pay the full value. Because they would have said that he has to pay the full value. Really, Shmita would have come and canceled it during the 10 years, and he would have had to pay nothing.
Nothing. Right.
Right, yeah. Amarava Hochab Mayaskin Bimalvala Mashkin of a Moisa Shtorot of the Basin. Not necessarily, because you could answer that our Mishnah is talking about one of the cases where Shmita does not cancel a loan anyway. For example, if you lent using a Mashkin, where the din is to a certain extent that the loan is already considered paid off because of the existence of the Mashkin, well, not really already paid off, it's already considered in the hand of the Malva. He has the Mashkin. Therefore, Shmita does not cancel such a thing. Shmita only cancels a loan where there's no mashkin.
Yeah. The mashkin cancels the Shmita, so to speak.
So to speak, yeah. Or over Moisir Shtoreis of the Beistin. Another possibility is if the Malveh gave over his Shtoreis to Beistin before Shmita. Rashi explains that that's the same thing as Prusable. Many other Rishonim say there's actually a difference. Mina Torah works only if you actually hand over your Shtoreis to Beistin and say, you collect these on my behalf. Then Shmita doesn't cancel it. What Hillel accomplished with the Prusable is to say you don't even have to actually give over your shtaris, you just make a declaration to Beis Din, Harini Moisa Lachem Kochoyev Sheyeshli, and that's enough. Yes. So according to Rashi, Moisa Shtaris of the Beis Din amounts to the same thing as Prusable.
So when Beis Din collects that money during Shmita, they have to give it back to the...
Then they could give it back to the guy, right, because only Lo-Yigur, he is... Right. Well, again, according to Rashi, most of Shtoreis of the Beis Din is just another way of saying Prusable. According to most of the other Rishonim, it's two different things. If you give over your Shtoreis, you don't need a Prusable Midaraisa, your loan is not canceled. If you don't actually give over your Shtoreis, you just make the verbal declaration in front of Beis Din or write out a document or whatever to Beis Din saying that the Prusable, that works only on the Dabonim level because of Hillel Takana. Okay.
This is done
before Shmita. Well, it depends, actually. Most of the poskim hold that Shmita is only Meshamet at the end, so therefore you would have to do a Prusable before Shmita is over, on Erev Rosh Hashanah at the end of Shmita. The Alter Rebbe brings in Shulchan Aruch that there is an opinion among Rishonim that says that it's true the loan only got canceled at the end of Shmita, but already from the beginning of Shmita you're not allowed to demand repayment. So therefore, the Alter Rebbe says that you should also, just to be on the safe side, make a prusable before Shemitah, and that Taka Arminag, exactly, you make a prusable. No, not 30 days. You do it on Erev Rosh Hashanah, the year before Shemitah, and at the end of Shemitah, right after Ataras Nedarim, at the end of Tavshin Ayin Dalet, and the end of Tavshin Ayin Hey, for example, we did that. So everybody after Ataras Nedarim got up in front of the same base in a tent and said, I didn't even Moise Lachem yet.
But the coming year was supposed to be
Shemitah. Because the coming year will be
Shemitah.
Right. Okay. All right. By the way, a difference as far as that is, there's machloikas whether Shemitah nowadays is Daraita or Darabanan. And there the Gemara discusses in Gittin, if we say it's Daraita, how can Hillel Sakana be Oiko or something Darabanan, be Oiko or something Daraita? And the answer is because Hefker based in Hefker. When Mashiach comes, Shemitah is definitely going to be Daraita again. Therefore, if we say that Moser Shtoroitz of a Beis Din is the same thing as Prusbel and only works Dirabanan, then it's not going to work. On the other hand, if you say, as most of the Rishonim do, that Moser Shtoroitz of a Beis Din, actually handing over your various IOUs to Beis Din for them to collect, works on a Daraita level, and only a Prusbel, the verbal declaration, is only Dirabanan, then fine, we won't do a Prusbel anymore, the Moser Mashiach, because it won't help, but we can still give over the actual Shtoroitz to Beis Din, and that will still work. Sorry, and Ditzinan, as we learn in a Mishnah, Ha'ma'al Ba'al Ha'mashkin. No, it has nothing to do with Chutz La'aretz or Eretz Yisrael. Ditzinan, as we learn in a Mishnah, Ha'ma'al Ba'al Ha'mashkin, Va'al Moser Shtoreitz Ol Beisdin, Ein Mashmitin. Two ways to avoid Shmita are if you lend using a Mashkin, or if you give your Shtoreitz to Beisdin to collect. So therefore, our Mishnah could be talking about scenarios like that. You can't prove anything from our Mishnah against the Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel.
Where does it say that?
It's a Mishnah in Shvi'is. It's a mission in Shavias, and the last parashah, Masechta Shavias, talks about the Dinim of Shemitah's Kesafim.
And then, where do they get that from?
Because where do the Chacham get anything from? Because they learn, because a Malval Amashkin is already considered as if it's already collected, and Moses Shtoreitz of a Beis Din is Lo Yigos, you are not allowed to demand repayment, but Beis Din is allowed to demand repayment. Ikadamri, another version of this discussion, went exactly the opposite. Amr of Yehuda Amr Shmuel, Hamal Ves Chaver Ela Eseshonim Ein Shvias Meshamatzai. The second version is just the opposite. He said if you lend for a 10-year period, Shvias does not cancel it. But Afagav the Osili De La Yigot, even though eventually there's going to be a time when the loan is collectible, nevertheless, Hashtamiya, like Karidim by La Yigot, nevertheless, now when it comes this first Shmitah, you're not able to collect it yet because it was for 10 years. And therefore, it's not subject to the rule of the pasuk that it's canceled. Amar Rav Kahana, and Rav Kahana says, Afanan Nami Tanena. Yeah, you can see that from our Mishnah, because our Mishnah mentioned a 10-year loan. Oimdim Kama Adam wrote to Litin Viyu Elif Zuz Viyadu, Bein Litin Mikan Bad Lamad Yom, Bein Litin Mikan Bad Eseshonim. According to their second opinion, our Mishnah works very well. The E Amar Tzvias Meshamata, if you're going to say that Shemitah canceled a 10-year loan, Kulanami Bori Shalom Ilay, wouldn't the Edim Zomim have to pay the entire amount? Amar Rava, so Rava says, so again, before we use this answer to say our Mishnah is not a contradiction against Shmuel, because Shmuel could understand our Mishnah about these scenarios, Malval Amashkin. Now we're going to say that not necessarily can Shmuel use our Mishnah as a proof for his din, because the Mishnah could be talking about those cases. Amar Rava, Hach of Maiskin, and our Mishnah could be talking about the Malval Amashkin of Moshe Shtoreitz of Beis Din, the Tanan HaMalval Amashkin of Moshe Shtoreitz of Beis Din in Mashmitin, so you can't prove his point from our Mishnah. Nevertheless, because you could say that the Mishnah is talking about a case of Malval Amashkin, etc. The usual rule in Shas is when you have two Lashonis, usually the Halacha is like the second Lashon, and in this case, that's how it is, especially because Tosfos points out the second Lashon is better because then our Mishnah fits more easily according to it. Sure, you could say our Mishnah is talking about Malval Amashkin, but it's more straightforward to say that our Mishnah is talking as a blanket statement that any Halacha could last for 10 years, and that would fit better with the second version of what Shmuel said. And that's Taka the Halacha, that a 10-year loan is not Meshamet. Even if it goes through Shvias, you can still...
What about an 8-year loan?
The point is, in other words, if you have a loan whose term extends beyond Shmita, it doesn't have to be. I mean, it could be a 3-year loan also, where you did it a year. The point is, even if it was, let's say, a 3-year loan, and you lent it the year before Shmita, same idea. The time, you're not able to demand repayment until after Shmita is over anyway. At the time Shmita comes, there's no lo yigos, So Prusbel is the Gemara is going to talk about next, that the Gemara is going to talk about later on the Amud, that a normal loan is for 30 days. The minimum normal loan is for 30 days. So if I lend you money, just a regular loan, without a set repayment time, which is 30 days, or let's say, for example, there was a set repayment time, it was, let's say, a year or whatever, and the year has passed, and you haven't paid up yet, and now Shmita comes. That's the kind of thing where Prusable is useful.
Okay. To extend it.
Okay. The Amar of Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Rav Yehuda says in the name of Shmuel another din in this connection. If a person says, I'm lending you money, I'll manas on condition that Shvius should not cancel that debt. Doesn't matter. Shvius mishametas, the shmita still cancels the debt. Question is, why? Lema kasava Shmuel. Are we going to say, do we have to say that Shmuel holds masna masha kasava Torah, that this amounts to making a t'nai against what the Torah says? Masna masha kasava Torah, t'nai bottle. And we know that there's a rule that if you make a t'nai against what the Torah says, it's bottle. The problem with that is that the problem with that is that we find, as the Gemara is going to say, that Shmuel himself says in certain other cases that you can make a t'nai against what it says in the Torah, if it's b'davar shebamamon, as we shall see. But don't we have a discussion as follows? Now, we learned in Bava Metzia the whole matter of Aina. We talked about over there that there's a dinim over there. If you overcharge somebody for merchandise or somebody underbuys it for less than the amount or whatever, so we talk about if the difference is less than a sixth, exactly a sixth, more than a sixth. You have the dinim of Aina over there when the sale is still valid, but the money still has to be refunded. The extra amount or whatever, when the whole sale is canceled, when he's meichel. Anyway, so we had a case over there that Shmuel said, if a person is, for example, selling something to somebody else, and he says, I'm selling this to you, almanas, that you do not have a claim of Aina against me. Rav Amar Yeshle Olav Aina. So Rav says, nevertheless, he can still have a claim of Aina. Shmuel Amar Ein Lo Olav Aina. And Shmuel says, the Tanai Taka works. He has no claim of Aina. So why should it be any different over here by Shmita?
The
answer and Tosfos talks about there is maybe a distinction that you could say with Aina, not necessarily is there going to be or not. Okay, but with Shmita, not necessarily is Shmita going to cancel it either. It could be paid before Shmita. Okay, the answer is Ha Itmar Allah. Because you know there was actually a discussion about that it's not so simple. When Shmuel says Ein Lo Olav Aina, there's an explanation about that. That Omer of Onan, that of Onan says, it's in the same sugya over there in Bava Metzia, L'didi mifar shalei minei de Shmuel. Shmuel personally explained to me that the din is not so simple. It depends what he said. If he said Amanas she'ein l'cha olai Aina, if he said it's Amanas that you don't have a claim of Aina against me, then fine, ain't loyal of Aina. Then fine, he doesn't have a claim of Aina. He waived his right. But Almanas she'ein boy Aina, on the other hand, if he said Almanas that there is no Aina in it, hare yesh boy Aina, then after all, it turns out there is Aina. It was something that was supposed to be worth $10, and he sold it to him for $15. Right. So according to Rashi, Rashi explains the differences like this. If he says ain't l'cha, means you are waiving your right to a claim of Aina. If he says she'ein boy Aina, then he's making a factual statement that I'm pledging that there is no Aina in this, that it is being sold at a fair price. And it turns out it's not being sold at a fair price. It turns out it's being sold at an inflated price. Therefore, that wouldn't work. Many other Rishonim explain that the Tosfos actually discusses, and many other Rishonim talk about, there's a different way you can make the distinction. If you're saying Ein l'cha olai Aina, means, sure, the din of Aina applies, but you're waiving your rights. Fine, a person has the ability to waive his rights. But if he says She'ein bo Aina, amounts to saying the dinim of the Torah of Aina should not apply to this.
No,
well, the dinim of the
Torah.
No, but that's what I'm saying. Tosfos explains that when Ein bo Aina amounts to saying the din of Aina does not apply to this purchase. Well, the din of Aina does apply to this purchase. Yeah. Hare yesh by Aina. So the same thing in our case of Shmita. Almanas shalai tishamteni b'shviyas. If you're saying that almanas that you will not you will not consider the loan void after Shmita. Sure, ain shviyas then the ain shviyas mishamata. Sure, that's a valid tonight. You can do that. Yeah. Almanas shalai tishamteni shviyas. But if the deal is that shviyas will not cancel the loan, you don't have the ability to do that. Shmita exists whether you like it or not. Shvius Mishamatzah, then Shvius will cancel it. So that's the difference. In other words, whether you're saying that you are, that's the din. So if you're saying that you, Almanas, that you will waive the rights that the Torah grants to you, sure, a person has the ability to do that. Almanas, that there isn't a na in it, which is a factual statement, which turns out to be not factual, or to say that there is no a na in it or there is no shmita in it, as if to say the din of a na or the din of shmita does not apply to this loan, you don't have the ability to do that.
So we'd like to know, how do we know that you can waive something derived from?
Because the dovish of a moment, you know, a person can waive any person can waive anything they want.
Is but how can you decide?
Because you can decide. I don't. I'm not going to pursue any claims about it. Fine, there's a null, but I'm entitled to waive it and say never mind. I'm not keeping the thing anyway, and I'm not going to bother asking for a refund or whatever. Yeah, a person has the ability to do that. There is, by the way, a couple of the posts can talk about that even though such a thing is allowed, you're allowed to, when you lend somebody money, as we're saying in the Gemara here, to say that that Shavius shouldn't cancel it, you shouldn't do that. The right thing to do is not to make such a tanai, but rather don't make such a tanai and then make a prusable if you need to. Right. Tana, we learn in a Braita, talking more about lending money, if somebody lends money to another person without specifying an amount of time, without specifying how long he has for repayment, he's not allowed to demand repayment of it within 30 days.
And after that?
As long as he needs to. And if the guy defaults on it, then he'll take him to Beis Din, whatever. But then you have the whole process, as we learned about in Bava Asra and elsewhere. But yeah, the minimum is 30 days. So when Rav Baba Chana was sitting as a Talmud in front of Rav, he thought to say, Hanemila b'milva b'shtar, maybe that only applies to a milva where it's written down in a shtar. Because you can figure, a person is not going to bother writing a shtar for a short-term loan less than 30 days. So therefore, we can assume it was 30 days. But Rav Baba Chana thought to say, if it was a milva alpeh, you didn't bother writing a shtar, maybe not. Maybe you can demand repayment even in less than 30 days. However, Amalei Rav, but Rav says to him, no, Hachi Amal Chavivi, this is what my uncle, meaning Rav Chia, said. The word Chavivi, by the way, has a double meaning. It means my chavi, my beloved one. It also means my uncle. Just like in Hebrew, the word doid means friend, or beloved one, and also uncle. In Aramaic, it's the same thing. The word chavivi means my beloved one, and also means my uncle, especially because in Aramaic, the word chavivi can actually be short for achi ovi.
Oh, that's
interesting. Yeah. Okay, anyway, so my uncle, Rav Chia, said no. Echad amalva b'shtar, ve'echad amalva alpeh, whether you're lending money using a shtar or whether you're lending money balpeh, either way, 30 days minimum, unless you specify it otherwise. Tani nami hachi, and in fact, we learn like that in a braisa, hamalva es chaveri stam, eni rashoi l'chavir pachas m'shloi shinyoim, echad amalva b'shtar, ve'echad amalva alpeh. So that's that. No difference. Now, where do we get that from? Omele Shmuel Rav Masna. So Shmuel says to his Talmud Rav Masna, lois pesiv akarach, do not sit down on your feet, in other words, stay standing, until you explain the following teaching. This that we just learned, that the minimum is 30 days, where do you get that from? Why is he telling him to stay standing? So some of them approach him and say, it just means, in other words, don't get yourself comfortable, just stay, I want you to stand here and explain it to me. Ben Yehoyada says an interesting thing about it. The Gemara mentions in Megillah that in olden times, they used to learn Torah standing up. Until in Ram Gamliel's times, at the end of the second Mishnah, so right after it, people started getting weaker. From then on, we learned Torah sitting down. So therefore, he says what Shmuel was telling Rav Masna. This the answer for this is so important to me, so precious to me. I think of it as something that they learned long ago, as something that the Chachamim of ancient times learned, and therefore I want you to say it over to me the way they would have, standing up. Anyway, So where do we get this from? Menoha milsa d'amar abanan. Where do we get this? The Chacham said, "Hamalva es chaveri stam ein rasher l'chavit pachas malamid yoyim echad amalva b'shtar echad amalva alpeh." Where do we get this from? Meila, if it was only b'shtar, fine. You'd use Rava Babachon and Savara that you don't bother writing a shtar for a few days. But yeah. Amalei, so the Machna tells him dichtiv because the pasuk says. The Pasuk says that don't think that, hey, Shmita is coming, I better not lend money, that would be also to do. So why does it say Shnasa Sheva Shnasa Shmita? The seventh year, the year of Shmita. If it says the seventh year is coming, any Adeshi Shnas Shmita, don't we know that the seventh year is Shmita? El Matamalam Shnasa Shmita, Loy Malach, it comes to teach you, Yesh Shmita Acheret Sheikazu, you have another kind of Shmita which is similar to this one. Namely, there's another kind of case where you have, just like with Shmita, the Torah says you're not allowed to ask for repayment of a loan anymore. There's another period that you're not allowed to ask for repayment of a loan, which is similar to Shmita. The Ezu, in what case is that? Zal Malves, Chaver Estam. This is the case where a person lends money without specifying Shein and Asher, the Torah of Pachim Shloshim Yom, where you can't collect it in less than 30 days. Why 30 days? Priva Bafe or Bashtar. Why 30 days? The Omamah Shloshim Yom Bashana Choshev Shana. Because we find in a different context, as far as dinim of planting before Shmita, that 30 days in a year can be considered a full year. We have a din over there that if you plant within a certain minimum amount of time, not before Shmita, actually, it's in general, it's also as far as the dinim of Orla, and in Rosh Hashanah we learned that as far as the dinim of Orla and whatever, that if you planted a minimum amount of time, the halacha is 44 days, 2 weeks for it to take root, and then 30 days for the 30 days to be considered a year, then that year already counts as the first year toward the years of Orla.
So
it's considered as if it was a whole year just because you have 30 days. So therefore we see that 30 days can be considered the equivalent of a year. So therefore, Rav Machna says that's a shnata sheva, shnata shmita, means there's a seventh year, which is the actual seventh year in the cycle, and then you also have a shnat, a sort of short-term thing, which can be called a year, namely 30 days, which is a shmita when you also can't collect during that period.
It doesn't matter that a short-term person can make it to this. Or just they wait to get away with the first year, then you stop.
No, that's what it is. That way you get away with the first year. That way that can be considered the first year, and that way you have less time. You have to wait that the plant is 44 days before. So if you have to, you plant it on Tu B'Av or earlier. Yeah.
Tu
B'Av is the 15th of Av. From then until Rosh Hashanah, you have 45 days. Yeah. 44 days, actually. 15 of Av and 29 of Av. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, since we mentioned a thing that Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav said, and which Rav Kahana asked on it, which is at the top of the Amud, the case of the 10-year loan, so now the Gemara is going to bring a couple of other dinim, that similar kinds of things, where Rabbi Yehuda said a din in the name of Rav, and then Rav Kahana asked him about it. So for Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav, if somebody opens up the neck hole in a shirt on Shabbos, he will be chayav chatos. So Rashi understands it to mean that we're talking about the shirt comes from the manufacturer with the neck hole still closed. You have to cut it open.
The collar, whatever.
A chaluk is like a shirt, like a button down shirt. Think of it as more like an undershirt or something. Yeah. So it comes from the manufacturer with the neck hole closed. You have to cut it open. Therefore, if you do that on Shabbos, then you're doing makabel patish. Yeah, you're finishing off.
The neck hole is always open.
Nowadays, you buy. Okay, we're talking about old times. Yeah, you know, they didn't have Walmart and whatever. You know. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, that's how Rashi understands it. A lot of the other Rishonim understand it a little differently. Of course, the manufacturer would make it with a neck hole, but then they would sew it closed with temporary stitches. When you got it from the store, you would have to cut open those stitches.
So
it's not to show it's not used, right? Okay. So anyway, so you chayav chatas, meaning it's an issur d'oraisa. Mask for Rav Kahana. So again, Rav Kahana asks on that. Why is there a difference between this and opening up the stopper on a barrel, where we learn in Shabbos, it was actually in Shlosha Prakim of Rambam a day or two ago, that you're allowed to take a barrel of wine and bring it to your table, and then take a sword and chop off the top of this is also a Tzarech Shabbos. You need a shirt for Shabbos. And it's actually mutter. But it's actually mutter. The point of the question is, isn't it the same kind of thing? You're making a new opening where there wasn't one before. On the face of it, you have the barrel over there has a stopper tightly attached to it with clay or whatever, and now you're chopping off the whole thing, so like you're making a new hole, and you're actually mutter to do it. So why over there is a mutter? And in the case of the shirt, it would be chayav hatas, it would be also daraisa. The answer is, amalei zeh chibur v'zeh eni chibur. The difference is, the shirt is completely attached. So you're making like a whole new opening over there, or even according to the Rishonim about the stitches over there, same thing. The stitches made it that when you're reopening it, it's like a whole new opening. The cover on the barrel is not so tightly attached. It could have been removed in principle. So therefore, instead, you're chopping it all fine. It's not a difference. It's mutter.
Just there to hold it, shouldn't get spoiled.
But it's not as tightly attached as the neck hole on the shirt, right? Therefore, when it comes to the shirt, you'd be chayav chatas, it'd be also daraisa, because of the chibur. When it comes to the barrel, it's not such a chibur, therefore not only it's not chayav chatas, but you're allowed to do it.
The difference between food and this is a shirt.
No, because for food you would be allowed to be mekalkel. You're allowed to rip open a package of food, for example. But you're not allowed, because mekalkel is only d'rabanan, and for food it's allowed. But to actually make a pesach, if it was an issur d'oraisa, for example, we all know when you open food on Shabbos, you're allowed to rip open the package because that's only mekalkel. But you're not allowed to tear letters because that would be moichik. That's a different malacha.
A lot of people say you cannot open a buckle.
So there you have different issues. There you have an issue that you're making. There you have an issue that you're making. So there you have an issue that you're making, possibly making a keli, because before the stopper wasn't, before the cap wasn't usable because it was attached with the ring over there, and now it is. So you have different opinions about that.
So what's the
halacha? I'm not sure. The ma'aseh, you see that many people do open them, so there evidently is some kind of heter for it. But you have people who hold that it's not. And therefore they're masked to open such bottles, like soda bottles or whatever before, or seltzer bottles or whatever before Shabbos. But anyway, the point is, yeah, you're saying as far as food or not, but that only for food, that'll allow you to do something which is only also d'rabbanan. It won't allow you to do something which is also d'oraisa. That's what Rav Kahana is asking. If you're saying it's also to open the shirt, the neck hole d'oraisa, then why would you be allowed to open the barrel by chopping off the top on Shabbos? And the answer is because l'chatchila it's not as tightly attached.
Unless it's glued or there's something.
No, but even you say you have this kit over there, you have this cement or whatever that's holding the stopper on. It's still not considered. It's still not considered as much of a chibur. Yeah.
So you still here Sunday?
I'm leaving first thing tomorrow morning.
If like even back
a long way.
After the week after.